950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show for your Thursday. Good to be with you today. Matt, Eric in today. Howdy, Eric. Have you had any, you know, you don't have kids, I don't believe. You have a spring break going on in any kind of way, shape, or form?
No, it's regular.
It's one of those great holidays that doesn't exist for you unless really you have kids in school age. It is spring break week for my family. We were at the Mall of America today. Dear Lord, apparently it's for a lot of people as well. That place was packed to the gills, to the freaking gills. So if you're over there, I did blacklight mini golf, which, you know, if your kids are older, that gets real old after about the first hole. I'm just going to say, yeah, all right, well, I can't see anything and it's dark and yeah, everything's glowing, and you know, it helps you identify dental work you need to get done. But still, it was madness. Of course, Twins opening up right now. Their first game of the season that counts. They're at Baltimore at 0-0 in the fourth inning right now. If that changes before we get into too much more, I'll let you know. But I'm feeling pretty good about the Twinkie Cakes. Do you follow sports at all? They're the baseball team in town. In case you didn't know, Eric.
Oh, is that it? No, I don't. I don't really follow.
Continuing my trend of producers saying, what? We have a baseball team? We have a football team? Yeah, thanks, Eric. They're good, actually. They have a chance, I think, at doing, you know, they could win the American League Central. We'll have to talk about that another time. Molly Beck is the exceptional political reporter for the Wisconsin State Journal, and she is kind enough to join us today to talk about a few issues going on in Wisconsin. And Molly, I have to start off with something you put up on Twitter. Today marked the 2-year anniversary of you getting pepper sprayed at a Donald Trump rally in Janesville. What?
Yes, that did happen. That is a true fact.
I mean, you look thuggish. I'm going to be honest with you. How in God's green earth did you get pepper sprayed?
The pepper spray was not meant for me. I should have clarified that. But I was covering one of the rallies Donald Trump had here ahead of the state presidential primary. And there was a big rally in Janesville, and I was the reporter from my paper that was supposed to cover the crowd outside, because at that point some of his rallies had gotten kind of angry at that point. And there was a big fight that broke out, and a girl punched a man, and then somebody pepper sprayed her, and I was about 1 inch away from her, so a lot of that pepper spray got on me, but luckily it didn't get in my eyes, so I could continue working and interviewing people, and then I got locked out of getting back into the building where the rally was, so I had to find my own way home. It was a terrible experience, honestly.
Actually, ironically, that was the synopsis of last night's, or 2 nights ago when they had the reboot of Roseanne. The same exact thing happened. My God, you didn't get hurt. I mean, obviously pepper spray is not exactly a mint freshener. So, I mean, there was that, but no lingering long-term effects, were there?
No, I mean, it got on my skin, but it didn't get in my eyes. So, I just dealt with it.
As a guy that went through the U.S. Army, when you go through basic training, they do the tear gas thing for you. So I can sympathize. Where they make you go in so that you know how to put on a gas mask. But before they leave, they want you to get a big old air full of that stuff. And so they rip off your gas mask. And so, yeah, I had drained sinuses that day. It was magical.
Okay. It wasn't that bad, well, I don't believe.
On the pain scale, the only thing that's a little worse than that is you've been covering what seems to be the long, eternal Supreme Court election case in Wisconsin. I'm only slightly exaggerating that. There is an election there for the Supreme Court in your state. We don't have that. We have, people show up on ballots, but usually they're appointed initially in the state of Minnesota. First of all, what created this open seat on the Wisconsin Supreme Court?
So Justice Michael Gableman was elected 10 years ago, and each term for Supreme Court justices are 10 years long. So his term is up this year, and he decided not to run again. So Milwaukee County Judge Rebecca Dallet, who is largely backed by liberals and Democrats, is running against Sauk County Judge Michael Skrenick, who is largely backed by conservatives.
is...
And they meet on Tuesday.
Yeah, and that's the other thing, which is a little odd here. So if this is this isn't necessarily a special election, is this how Wisconsin Supreme Court seats are decided, or why wouldn't they do it in the first Tuesday, not the first in November?
Right. So the Supreme Court elections are technically nonpartisan, though they are very partisan races. And so they have them during an April spring election, the general election in April.
What is the current dynamic makeup of the Wisconsin Supreme Court? How many? I mean, as you say, it's non-political, but it's been political ever since Prosser decided to become Johnny Chokey, and that whole thing came to light. What is the current makeup, Republicans and Democrats, on the Wisconsin Supreme Court?
So the conservatives, the court is perceived to be controlled by conservatives, and the conservative justices control the court 5-2. So depending on who wins this race, it's not going to flip the court in any way. But if Judge Dallet, for example, if she wins, then people would start describing the court as being 4-3.
Okay. And, in this day and age, though, that still doesn't matter because, I think we're not novices here. I mean, usually the political parties, especially, as you said, they've taken advantage of what is supposedly a nonpartisan race. They put their people there. When it comes to these rulings, I'm presuming these Supreme Court justices get calls from the political higher powers and are told how to rule on these things. Am I really that out of line for believing that?
I mean, I can't speak to, what their communication is with lawmakers or politicians, but, the reason that people, it's a nonpartisan race, but the reason that people believe and should believe that they are political because, outside groups get involved and they are allowed to spend money on behalf of each candidate. So ultimately and inevitably, the races come down to what people see as a conservative candidate and a liberal candidate. Some have tried running as a moderate, an impartial judge. And I mean, I think 2 years ago in the last competitive race that we had for Supreme Court, there was a judge who did that and he got 9% of the votes or something. So it's a nonpartisan race, but it's a partisan race.
What is the number show right now? Is the person who is aligned with the left, is it looking like a lot of these races, not just in Wisconsin, that Senate District 9, but as well nationwide? Are they looking like they are taking the lead, or is this, bucking the trend where the Republican seems to be the front runner?
I mean, it's really hard to say. I know that there's been a lot of involvement from national figures in this race and on behalf of Rebecca Dallet. Eric Holder came to campaign for her. Joe Biden just endorsed her. So there's been a lot of national attention. There's been a couple articles that have said that this race is, people are wondering if she wins this race, then they will, believe that this so-called blue wave is coming for Wisconsin elections here. But it's hard to say who will win Tuesday because there's a lot of money being spent on both sides and on behalf of Judge Michael Skrenick too. So, conservatives always turn out pretty well for these spring races too.
Well, and the numbers for the Republicans, I mean, look at it, it was Pennsylvania 18. The Republicans showed up in the same numbers. It's all of a sudden the Democrats are showing up and the independents voting with the Democrats. That's what's scaring the living daylights out of the Republicans. That they already know their 30, 31, 33% of the populace will show up for them. They're banking on not 31, 33% of the rest of the populace showing up to vote for the Democrats. And that's been kind of the problem that they're having is the turnouts are outrageously high for these elections. There has been, at least nationally, and I saw this a little bit here in Minnesota, a lot of reports of the Republicans, conservatives are very concerned about this race and concerned about this seat. And there has been an influx of national dollars coming in for the Republican, not officially labeled, but the more conservative judge on this case. That's been a sign that there has been concern and generally has not worked too well for the Republicans to throw a lot of money into these races. Is that true? Has there been a lot of money coming in that race? And is it because they're concerned this seat could end up going back to a more liberal judge?
I mean, I have seen, the NRA endorsed Judge Skrenick and they've put some money into this race. Eric Holder's group aimed at flipping seats from Republican to Democratic, also has spent money on behalf of Judge Dallet. And I know that the state Republican Party here has also spent a lot of money on this race on behalf of Michael Skrenik. So I think any Republican here would tell you that they believe that, you know, Democrats are energized and that they're expecting turnout to be to reflect that energy that they see. But it's we'll see if it matches what, you know, conservatives can usually pull out and turn out. I know that in the primary, the February primary, that there were two liberal candidates, and, you know, putting their votes together, they had more votes than Judge Skrenik. But that also occurred the last competitive race, and the conservative judge won that race anyway. So we'll see what happens.
And there's the other interesting element of this is that you have gerrymandered districts, you might have voters restrictions and stuff like that. The reality is it's a statewide race, and any gerrymandering mm-hmm. in a district doesn't matter. It's the amount of people in the state. I imagine Scott Walker himself has been out, campaigning for the conservative in this case, because, I mean, obviously he's enjoyed having a Supreme Court that's basically backed up every decision. And not only that, but has knocked down investigations into his administration as well.
Governor Walker, he appointed Judge Skrenik in 2015 to the Sauk County bench. And Sauk County is just a county away from Dean County. West of here. And I did see a campaign mailer. I'm not sure who paid for it. It might have been Judge Skrenik's campaign with a photo of Judge Skrenik and Governor Walker together. I believe he's endorsed Judge Skrenik. He hasn't been, you know, really out there campaigning a lot or anything, but I know that he has said he supports Judge Skrenik, and obviously because he appointed him to the bench.
This obviously as well. Now, once again, this race, this is decided on Tuesday the 3rd, right?
Yes.
Right. And then right. You will get a nice long sleep. Yeah. This has been a long race.
I hope so.
Well, at least for a few days, because it does sound like something you and I talked about the last time you were on the air. There are these open seats in the Wisconsin mm-hmm. Assembly, the Wisconsin Senate, that Scott Walker was not going to call elections for. And judges, now I believe it's two judges, have ruled against him. And am I correct in
three.
that he has decided he's not going to take this to the – is it three judges?
It's three judges.
It's three yep. judges. Is it true that he has decided he's not going to take this to the U.S. Supreme Court?
Yes, that's right. And it would be the state Supreme Court. But Governor Walker appealed a Dane County Circuit Court judge's order, or asked for them to delay the requirement to call these elections promptly. And then another Dane County judge denied that motion to do that. And so then Governor Walker appealed that decision to an appellate court in Waukesha County, which is, you know, a pretty conservative county. But that judge there also denied their motion. So he could have appealed to the Supreme Court, but he decided last night not to do that, and he this morning called for those elections. And so those elections will take place in June. And there was also a piece of legislation that Senate Republicans were pushing at the same time that basically would have gotten around any judge's order to call those elections. And eliminated a requirement in state law for the governor to call special elections promptly when there's a vacancy. But they also abandoned that effort this morning, too.
Well, yeah, because eventually that seat's going to be held by a Democrat, and that's not something you want to put into place if you're the Republicans, and all of a sudden you find yourself in the minority on this. The thing which I find to be it's funny when you talk about this in the judicial branch. I don't care. We've seen this with a few of the recounts and stuff we've had in Minnesota. When it comes to voting, I don't care which party they are. They all basically want to kind of take a hands-off saying, no, the public has a right. No judge, it seems to me, regardless of party, wants to be the deciding factor and saying that, no, your district is not going to have representation. Even if it's a lame duck representative, their mentality is, it's not my job as the judicial branch to start dictating the constituent representation for said district. Henceforth, it does not surprise me that the judges, even in a conservative court, or maybe Walker got wind the Supreme Court was not going to rule with him either. It doesn't surprise me the judicial branch, regardless of political leanings, is all saying, no, 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 you need to have these. This is how the government of this country works.
The judges, the rulings decisions that the judges made, they were pretty simple. The arguments were pretty simple. They said, you know, the law says that you must have elections. You must have lawmakers that represent people. And state law says you have to promptly call these elections. So, I don't, you know, even in the appellate decision, I didn't read anything that had caveats or anything like that. It was basically, you know, you need to call these elections now.
Yeah. How many elections are we looking at?
There will be a primary in the first Senate district, which is in Northeast Wisconsin, and because two Republicans are running. And I'm not sure about the 42nd Assembly District, which is around Dane County, but not all the way in Dane County. So there will be a primary election in May, and then there will be a general special election in June for both seats.
And so one Senate seat, one Assembly seat. Mm-hmm. Neither one of these is going to be the deciding factor of majority, though, in either the Senate or the Assembly, correct?
No.
All right. But it's so the main point is this, is that it seems that Walker, just especially after the Senate 9 race, where was a massive Democratic upset, and now with the Supreme Court race possibly and frantically spending money trying to prevent that from going to a liberal seat, you know, what they really are trying to avoid is have, as you said, with June, you know, going into summer and having, you know, more Democratic defeats potentially. I mean, I'm presuming that Senate District 1 is a very conservative district, as of up northeastern Wisconsin, and henceforth, if that was to flip, the Dane County seat, you know, I'm going to presume is going to have a decent chance of the Democrats winning there. But if we have it like what's happened in other places and a fairly conservative seat goes to the Democrats, you know, it's really salt in the wounds, especially as you're trying to ramp up your election efforts for November.
I think, you know, Republicans know that this might be a tough election year for them. I don't believe the Assembly Speaker is worried about the Assembly seat as much as probably the Senate leader is worried about that seat. Because in the Assembly, there's 99 members and 64 of them are Republicans right now. So there's no time soon is that going to flip to a Democratic majority. But in the Senate, there's many fewer of them. So, you know, if the seat in northeastern Wisconsin, which includes Green Bay, so it's not 100%, you know, conservative, flips to a Democratic seat, that's one more seat that, you know, that gets them closer to having a flipped Senate.
Well, and by your own numbers there, it's the Assembly, though. I mean, I will say this. Now, it doesn't sound like this U.S. Supreme Court ruling on the Wisconsin district is going to come. The seats as they are going to be the ones that are in the election, correct? Coming in November, right?
Right. Yep. Right. That's right. Yep.
So there's not going to be a change there, but ask North Carolina, ask Virginia about, you know, whether, you know, there's a safe margin right now, because the system, and I know that you, as a journalist, you're hesitant to call it like this, but the system that the Republicans have put in place is gerrymandered seats, limits on the voting, and try to hold as many seats as possible. The problem is, we're seeing this in Minnesota too, where the Minnesota House is probably in play at this point for the Democrats. You have these suburban seats, and with Wisconsin, so many suburban areas that are there, that, you know, really are 55-45 Republican or closer. And a lot of those seats are going to be in trouble. I think that it's as much as the Assembly would like to say this, I'm telling you what, if we do see this blue wave coming, and it's similar to what happened in Virginia, I don't know if necessarily, you know, I mean, I understand what you're saying, and this is not contradicting you or challenging you, but I don't know if your Assembly Speaker should be necessarily feeling comfortable at this, because the last thing these guys, the system is based on their voters show up, the other voters don't. And the system is not designed for the other voters showing up and showing up in record numbers.
Yeah, and I shouldn't imply that Assembly Speaker Robin Voss is, you know, doesn't care what happens there or anything like that. I'm sure that, you know, he will, you know, make, you know, every effort that he can to keep that seat. But, you know, that the specter of, you know, it flipping to a Democratic majority is not as possible as it is in the Senate, which I think there might be more urgency to do.
You need to take that pepper spray with pride. I mean, you got pepper sprayed. That's a pretty damn cool thing, if you ask me. It wasn't cool then, but it's the fact that you can say, you know, when you have your kids, you have your grandkids. I was pepper sprayed once. That will be a good story around the old Easter table at that point.
Yeah, unfortunately, people remember that more than any story I've written. So far.
Pass the salt and pepper. And speaking of pepper, Molly Beck, we will link to some stories of yours a little bit later on. We'll spotlight this interview. All my best on Tuesday. I might check back with you next week, okay?
Absolutely. That would be great.
Molly Beck is with the Wisconsin State Journal, covers politics down there. She's kind enough to join us. Thanks, Molly.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. Talk to you soon. Molly Beck, we'll take a break. Come on back. Get caught up. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Tom Hartman here telling you that solar energy isn't just for environmentalists. Switching to all-energy solar is actually perfect for reducing your carbon footprint while also saving money on your monthly electric bill. The fact that solar panels cause no earth-harming emissions while it's producing energy is a bonus. Who in the world could object to that? But they can also help you save money month after month for decades. And they do it with a clean footprint. So go green and start saving money today by visiting allenergysolar.com.
With spring here, it's time for the annual Easter Brunch Buffet at the Park Tavern. Enjoy Easter ham and slow roasted beef, eggs benedict, biscuits and gravy, salads, fruit side, and dessert. Seatings are from 10 a.m. till 3 p.m. on Sunday, April 1st, and reservations are recommended. $20.95 for adults, $14.95 for seniors. Kids are $10.95. 5 and under are free, and don't forget the hour of free bowling with every reservation. On Louisiana Avenue, north of Highway 7 in St. Louis Park, and at parktavern.net, enjoy a wonderful and easy Easter brunch with your family at the Park Tavern.
Crooner's Lounge and Supper Club is delighted to offer its spacious facilities for your private function. From weddings, retirement parties, business dinners, or any special occasion, Crooner's combines a dedicated full-service special events team, an award-winning chef, and a beautiful lakeside ambiance to make your event a resounding success. Visit croonersloungemn.com to learn more about their private dining options or call 763-571-9020 to get a quote for your next event today.
Saturdays at 1 p.m., you have a chance at a fresh start, a new beginning. Hi, everybody. This is Freddie Bell, host of New Beginnings. Our show features the concerns of America's 78 million baby boomers in employment, finance, health and nutrition, spirituality, and even entertainment. Every day is a chance for a fresh start. Join us Saturdays at 1 p.m. for New Beginnings with Freddie Bell on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Hi, this is Gregory Rich from Habitation Furnishing and Design, and I'd like you to tune in to a new program, Drink in the Style. Sundays at 5 p.m., Drink in the Style is going to be a one-hour conversation about interior design and aesthetics, all while enjoying a cocktail created by a local mixologist. Drink in the Style, Sundays at 5 p.m., brought to you by Habitation Furnishing and Design.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Thanks, Molly. She's fantastic, actually. And once again, those elections coming up here, the Supreme Court election comes up here on Tuesday. I will say this. Why is this applicable? First of all, obviously, Wisconsin, part of the metro area. But the main reason you should pay attention to what's going on in Wisconsin is they have fixed that state as much as they possibly legally can. As a matter of fact, probably illegally. They're being challenged on the gerrymandering. They have fixed that state as much as they can in regards to try to get Republicans to win. If the Republicans can't hold this Supreme Court seat, if the Republicans can't hold that one Senate, one assembly seat, if they can't do that in the district and in the system that they have gerrymandered to death, that is going to be a huge concern for the Republicans in the state. Because I'll tell you what, I'm sorry, that's the entire system is based on, the entire Republican system is based on 31 to 33% of the people voting for them, period. So they just have to keep the other number below that number. And they've had success. But even when you go to like places like Alabama and you go to Pennsylvania 18, which are not Democratic areas, but yet pretty much every freaking Democrat is showing up and voting, they can't counterpunch that. They don't have reserves in the wings to bring on in for voting. They have basically, because most independents, if they ever voted Republican, voted with the old school 1980s Republicans who are fiscally conservative and socially liberal. Those people don't exist anymore. So they're generally voting with the Democrats. So this is why this is a concern, and I appreciate Molly giving us the update on that. Speaking of which, I did mention Easter. Should take a quick mention here. The Easter brunch buffet at the Park Tavern. Eric, have you ever tried that out? It is fantastic.
No, I've not been to the Park Tavern yet.
Oh, okay, done. We're off the air here. Hugh and I are going up. It is fantastic. Great burgers, great food. But they do these great buffets over the holidays. And, of course, they got the latest one is the Easter brunch buffet. I'm going to make a suggestion that if you do not have reservations, you do want to make reservations right now as soon as you can. They can still handle pretty large groups. Every reservation gets an hour of free bowling. The food, sensational. The ham, slow roasted beef. They got the biscuits and gravy, all the breakfast, all the lunch things you want, all the great sides, desserts, a lot of great fun. If I've got kids, it's the greatest place in town to take kids for Easter. It really is. You don't want to have to cook. You don't want to clean. Just go to the Park Tavern. ParkTavern.net, ParkTavern.net for more information about that. Let's take our next break and get caught back up completely. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. When we come on back, I want to just, we have to dismantle the Republicans in this idea of, you know, $50 million for school safety, because that's really not enough money. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. Yeah, it's been a long, long
time. You're such a sage. While shopping for a fireplace insert at Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces, I was amazed at all the choices. Not just gas, electric, or wood-burning, but also built-in or freestanding, and options in every style from antique to modern. The staff really listened to us, explained the options, and helped us choose a fireplace we absolutely love. Now it warms our hearts and our home every winter. Thank you, Woodland Stoves, for a great addition.
Hi, I'm Peter Solak, putting in a word for the EPA Burn Wise campaign. It has important information about clean burning fireplaces. This is an important part of our mission at Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces. We know that the fireplace has to work. Work with your life, work with your living space, and also be environmentally smart. Come see us. Learn to burn wise. We have over 35 working units on display at the corner of Riverside and East Franklin Avenue in Minneapolis. Visit our store in person or online at woodlandstoves.com.
Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces, out of the ordinary products and services since 1977.
Someone asked if I really do love my Rudy Luther Toyota Sienna as much as I say I do. Well, this week I've got groceries, a Target run, 7 sports practices with carpooling for 4 of them, 2 games, 3 music lessons, 4-H, dance, helping a friend move. We'll also probably have 3 play dates. I'll have to drive to work, and I'll have at least 1 weekend family outing. Yes, it's a lot, but I get to do it all in relaxing comfort and style. Yes, I do love my Sienna, and you can fall in love for yourself at Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169.
Tap, taste, and treasure at Vinaigrette, where we have some warm seasonal recipes all ready to create dynamite meals. Our fig balsamic vinegar pairs perfectly with roasted Brussels sprouts or baked brie. And sweet potatoes are always a winner, but never more than when they're roasted with a drizzle of vinaigrette cinnamon or orange-fused extra virgin olive oil on top. Come in today for more custom-crafted food and cocktail recipes at Vinaigrette, 50th and Xerxes in Minneapolis and 287 Water Street in downtown Excelsior. Online at vinaigrettemn.com.
With your AM950 weather, this is Eric Nelson. Today will be sunny with a high near 43. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low around 27. Friday, a chance of rain and snow before noon with highs near 42. And Friday night, a low around 27. Saturday will be cloudy with a high of 31 and a low of around 13. EatLocalMinnesota.com's Restaurant of the Week is Milva's Cafe, a family-owned restaurant featuring home-cooked-style breakfast and lunch with hot dish specials every day. Located at 1720 Glenwood Avenue in Minneapolis, just east of Bend.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Twins still 0-0, by the way. So I want to talk about this. There's a real push by the Republicans in the state for to create a new scapegoat for gun violence in schools. And that is the schools themselves, especially the teachers. Because once again, Republicans hate teachers. They hate them with the fire of a million suns. They can't stand them. They hate them. And if they can figure out a way, and this is clearly by design, if they can figure out a way to blame gun violence in schools on teachers, they will consider that the greatest win-win of all time. And that's why this whole idea of arming teachers is out there, is because then they can blame the teacher. It's the teacher's fault. The teacher had a gun. You know, if they were dumb enough to have it in their desk under lock and key, well, that's on the teacher, not the gunman who illegally got the gun or just went to a gun show and legally got the gun. And even though he was writing posts online every day about how he was going to go murder a bunch of kids and was able to go shoot them up, it wasn't the gunman's fault. It was the teacher or it was the school. Why didn't the school do more? This is what the Republicans, this is their entire argument. What they are proposing is basically not common sense gun control, better background checks, getting rid of assault weapons, which you can legally ban. We've had those bans in place before. As much as these people like to say that, you can't do that. We did that, the Brady Bill. How many years? We just didn't renew the Brady Bill. You can ban assault weapons. You can do that. We could do a lot of things to actually stop this on the front end, limiting the access for guns. Mental health screenings, you know, insurance, mandatory insurance for gun owners. Stuff like that. Mandatory long-term training for this, inspecting gun shops. Lots we can do. There is a ton we can do that does not infringe upon anyone's Second Amendment rights. There is a ton. Republicans don't want to do this. And so they've come up with this new red herring, this new facade, that we are going to give money to schools and then they can take care of it. Because that's the entire argument. We gave the schools money. Why didn't they stop the gunmen? We gave you money. And this money is what they're saying this money is to be used for is, I mean, they got a lot of great talking points on this. They can hire trained security guards. They can get X-ray machines. They can have security doors, bulletproof glass, stuff like that. So you say to yourself, all right, well, is that a bad deal? You have to, if you want to do what the Republicans are saying, you will need to spend, my estimate is somewhere around $1 billion. $1 billion to even begin to make a dent in the security upgrades just for schools. Mind you, shootings that happen at movie theaters or in business offices or in churches, this would not even apply to them. $1 billion. They're not putting forward $1 billion. The House Educational Finance Chairman is Jennifer Loon. She is a representative Republican out of Eden Prairie. Jennifer Loon is putting forward $50 million. And you say to yourself, wow, that's a lot of money. $50 million. And that is for, so schools can, because if you say $50 million, it makes it sound like, wow, that's a big investment. But that's not going to go to one school. But they're putting this out there that $50 million is for you to hire a security guard. It's for your X-ray machine. It's for your security door. It's for all your bulletproof glass. They're going to cover it. And the problem is that $50 million is not going to go for anything, really. There are 327 public school districts in the state, plus, oh gosh, with non-operating common school districts, special school districts, charter schools, state school academies, education districts, stuff like that. You add in another 250 around there. That's 577 districts. 577 districts. 577 districts in the state of Minnesota. And that's probably a little bit low. Let me redo that again, because I think actually that might be a little bit high. 327 plus, we'll do 225 instead. There you go. 552. So 550. We'll just make it easy. 550 school districts. We'll round it down. We'll try to make this as applicable as possible. That's right. In case you didn't know, we stumbled into another one of those Matt's Math corners. So they want to spend $50 million. $50 million. You divide that by 550 school districts, not schools, school districts in the state. That's $90,909. All right. For every district. All right. If you are looking at number of schools that are in the state of Minnesota, this is number of schools. This is area learning centers, distance learning programs, K-12 schools, elementary schools, middle schools, secondary schools, and they have them all listed here. You just can find these numbers. If you're wondering where I'm pulling these numbers off, it's the State of Minnesota Education website. They have all the numbers here. So remind you, for every school, they want to have a security guard, x-ray machine, security door, bulletproof glass. There are 2,072 schools in the state of Minnesota. We'll just round it down. We'll make it easy on you. 2,000, all right? So you take that $50 million, all right, divide it by 2,000, because that's for every – there's 550 school districts in the state, but number of schools is 2,000. That's $25,000 per school. So you're telling me for $25,000 – you're going to hire someone to what? Watch the school all day long with a loaded gun on their hip? A trained security guard? Not just someone who is, you know, just roams off the street and says, I'll fill out an application. Sure. It's this or working at McDonald's. Sure. I'll come here. I'll keep the kids safe. I'll work the fry baskets. That's $25,000. Who in God's green earth? Who in God's green earth is going to work that kind of job where you are going to have to possibly get into shootouts with people for $25,000? You're surely not going to get anyone who's trained. And then we have the other question. So what are their responsibilities? How many hours a week are they working? Are they working from 8 in the morning until 4 or 5 in the afternoon? What about when there's a basketball game that night? Or the Girl Scouts are meeting in the school? Or you have a play on Friday and Saturday night? Is that same guy at $25,000 going to do this? And we're not even touching the x-ray machines, which someone sent me one of the x-ray machines that they use. It's a $200,000 jobber, which is not $25,000. It's $200,000. Doesn't include the security door. You might get, what, one security door? One. I mean, even if your entrance has four or five security doors, those things are pricey. $25,000 is not going to do anything for you. Bulletproof glass, please. How many panes of glass are you really going to be able to afford with $25,000 for every school? This is a red herring. This isn't going to keep these schools safe. This is not going to work. And $50 million is nothing when you look at 2,000 schools. This is an attempt by them to make it look like we actually are trying to do something when they're doing nothing at all. And then the future will be, well, I gave that school, we gave schools $50 million. It's not our fault they couldn't find a guy who works 25, who is a highly trained security specialist to work for $25,000 a year, probably 70 to 80 hours a week. That's on them. That's not on us. I mean, those people are a dime a dozen where I'm from, but it's not my problem. It's theirs. This $50 million is not going to do anything. If you want to keep the kids safe, the clear option is to work on the front end and limit the access to guns. You're wasting, and if you're a fiscal conservative, this is wasting your money. This is not, this is throwing a few dollars at a problem and acting like that's going to help. It's nothing. You should be, if you're a fiscal conservative, you should be furious too, because this is just wasting $50 million. And then the questions of stuff like, well, what happens with open enrollment? Is this going to be, I'm presuming you're just going to give a straight $25,000 to every school. Because if you start, you know, dishing this out on open enrollment, sure, Minnetonka can build a moat and a gun tower a la a prison camp on their campus. But the poorer schools in Minneapolis or the poorer outstate schools, well, you know, what do they get? You know, some twine to touch the, you know, close the door? This is nothing. This is not going to help. This is not going to make things safer. It's not going to make your kids safer. This is just a complete and total mirage that Jennifer Loon and the rest of the Republicans are pushing forward. If they really were serious about their initiatives, this should be a $1 billion bill. They should be raising, you know, taxes on the wealthy to pay for it. But the reality is, this is not about anything else outside of giving them some cover to act like they've done something, as well as also be able to in the future, blame the schools and blame the teachers themselves for the inevitable gun massacre which will happen in the state of Minnesota. 952-946-6205. Jimmy has been kind enough to hold. Welcome on in. Jimmy from Brooklyn Park.
Hello, Matt.
Hey.
So normally, you know, I try to keep, you know, a level head on all this, but you can't keep a level head anymore because it's gotten so outrageous. And it's a war against, you know, you and me and Americans, and a war on labor, a war on the education system. And so today I turn on the news and that our buddy Kurt, how do you pronounce the last name? Daut?
Yeah.
That Speaker of the House. He's talking about the Florida shooter. And he actually refers to this demon possessed kid as a gentleman. And I was just like, my jaw dropped. He's talking about somebody that takes an assault weapon and blows the kids away, which they'll never show pictures of the dead people, the dead kids.
And I think that's
they'll
a
never
good
show
thing.
Those pictures.
I think that's a good thing.
Well, maybe so, but in Australia, after they had their massacres, the last one that they were going to put up with, they put the pictures of the dead right on the front page of the paper. And well, it's a shock, you know.
Well, it was
a shock.
And Jimmy, I get where you're going with that. First of all, now I don't know. Maybe I would be very hesitant to going down that road because those are going to be some gruesome pictures. But your argument about Kurt Daut calling the shooter a gentleman, you know, this is just, you know, he's that rascal who shot up the school. That whippersnapper, it's just the way they are. They can't really vilify this and call it what it is. It's American terrorism. I have a friend of mine in Ireland who is, who has kids, and their kids are getting older. And he said, well, when are you sending your kids over to visit us in Ireland? I said, came up a game plan. I said, note to yourself, bring your kid, let your kids come on over here. They can spend the summer with us. And he said, there's not a chance on this planet I'm going to send my kids to the United States because of the gun violence in your country. He said, no way. I am not going to risk it. It is too dangerous. The rest of the world looks at us with their jaws on the ground, wondering, how many dead kids does it take for you to realize maybe, just maybe, this is an epidemic and that the people who have pushed this society on us don't have our best interests in mind? Gary is on hold as well. Let's get Gary on in here. Welcome on in, Gary.
Yeah, I just want to, I totally agree. I'll go farther with this Parkland student. That's one of the protesters that saw the mass shooting. he made an indictment on the older generation for corrupting our whole political system and our economic system. And he said, kids shouldn't have to do this about this NRA crap that's going on. And I'll go farther than that. They're the biggest bunch of ingrates I've ever seen, the baby boomer generation. Their parents and grandparents were suffering in terrible poverty, and FDR, the New Deal, and the Democrats gave them almost everything
they got.
Gary.
Gary's getting worked up too much there. And, yeah, he's screaming right into the phone. I'll tell you what, let's take a break. When I come on back, let's talk about the fact that, once again, I want to point out the Republicans, Mary Franson, Laura Ingraham, all these people attacking the victims of a gun massacre because how dare they not love guns afterwards? It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
This is Bill McLeslie, owner of IP House. When you got your computer, you heard that it all works together seamlessly. You just need to connect the printer to the Bluetooth on the router? Does your business struggle with technology? Our mission is to make technology simple. We provide tech support for businesses just like yours. We help you take control of your technology with support in plain English. If your technology has the better of you, call us, 612-337-6337.
Hello, this is Ellen Krug from Hidden Edges Radio. When I'm not on the radio, I'm standing in front of audiences training about diversity and inclusion and on how to be welcoming to others who are different from us. More than ever, employers and organizations need professional diversity and inclusion training. I can offer that training through my company, Human Inspiration Works, LLC. I'd love to make your workplace or organization more welcoming. For more information, go to humaninspirationworks.com. Thank you.
Hi, Matt McNeil for Rudy Luther Toyota. My first Toyota love was the RAV4 back in 1998. When I was traveling in February, I needed a rental car, and I jumped at the opportunity to drive one again. The RAV4 is fantastic with all the bells and whistles you need, and it has all the modern safety features to keep us safe, comfort as we vacationed. It fit all five of us and our luggage with ease. I was able to revisit my first love. Now, you can fall in love for yourself by test driving a RAV4 today at Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169.
Atheists Talk is the radio show for free-thinking Minnesotans. Listen on Sunday mornings at 9 o'clock. Every Sunday, we bring you science, philosophy, politics, and plain old fun from an atheist's point of view. Visit our website at minnesotaatheists.org for more details. Tune in to Atheists Talk Radio Sunday mornings at 9 o'clock on KTNF AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's good radio without the good book.
The number one source of the Twin Cities gay scene is All Digital. Follow Twin Cities Gay Scene on Facebook and Twitter. Sign up for the Scene Shot email blast for weekly updates and chances to win great prizes. No app is needed to view the bi-weekly web editions of Scene. It's GLBTQ media for the mobile generation. Find it all at TwinCitiesGayScene.com. That's TwinCitiesGayScene.com.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Programming brought to you by eatlocalminnesota.com. Milda's Cafe is the restaurant of the week. Fantastic food over there. Reminder, tomorrow, lunchtime, it's pasty day over there. Fantastic pasties, great chicken, great breakfast too. 1720 Glenwood Avenue in Minneapolis, just east of Penn. It's Milda's Cafe, the eatlocalminnesota.com restaurant of the week. 952-946-6205. I just found a... picture, the guy's got, this is a Twitter account, it's a picture of Scaramucci, and the title is Hairdo Mix Swear Word. That's one of the funny things I've seen today. Republicans, okay, what are you freaking doing? Seriously, what are you doing? You're attacking children. You should have seen this coming. When we have gun slaughter after gun slaughter after gun slaughter after gun slaughter in this country, especially after Newtown, especially after Las Vegas. And you have gun slaughter after gun slaughter after gun slaughter. And consistently, you did the same thing over and over again. You pulled the chain of your Republican lawmakers and told them, don't you dare think about gun regulations or gun control, while basically pushing this thoughts and prayers, followed immediately by, do you know what would make this even better? More guns! It was only inevitable that these kids in America who live under this threat of gun violence finally had had enough. The kids who are speaking a month ago were in a school in Florida where a gunman slaughtered their classmates, slaughtered them. They didn't know if they were going to live to see the day. They didn't know when people were out in the hallways, was that the gunman? Is my friend dead? Parents were sitting at home frantically trying to text and call their kids. This is not normal, for God's sakes, you pathetic human beings. It is not normal. And you guys have tried to normalize it by getting us to ignore the problem. And finally, the kids have said enough. If the adults are not going to do anything about it, then we're going to try to solve this. And that is where they're at. I get it. You're furious because as opposed to liberal Matt McNeil, who's Mr. No Guns Ever, blah, 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 or, Nancy Pelosi. This is kids. These are kids that survived a gun massacre, you idiots. What are you thinking continually attacking them? And now you guys are just screaming, Hitler Youth, Hitler Youth, Hitler Youth. This is all you're yelling at this point. And trying to label children who survived a gun massacre, who are upset with guns, wow, how dare they, as Nazis. Shut up. All of you, just shut up. There was two paths you could go on. Just keep quiet. Or you could go on out there and try to say, I'm going to tell these kids to shut it. Hey, jerky friends of mine, look what I did. I'm taking on those kids who survived the gun massacre. Aren't I cool? No, you're not. You're idiots. Stop it. You guys need to stop it. Laura Ingraham's losing sponsors left and right now because she went out there and decided to insult them. You even have Mary Franson have to apologize. There's no win here for you guys. This is a mess you have created, and the kids have had enough. Final word here. We'll get to Julie in Minneapolis. Welcome on in, Julie.
Yeah, just a quick comment. I noticed there's another commentary article on Mary Franson in the Pioneer Press this morning, Republican from Alexandria. And maybe I'm too cynical, Matt, but I kind of wonder, well, first of all, I don't think she's sorry at all.
No, not at all.
I don't think it's an accident. I don't think anybody misconstrued her innocent motives.
Nope,
I'm wondering if she didn't aim those comments specifically at her base in Alexandria. I'm not sure because I don't have friends or relatives that live in Alexandria. But what do you think? Do you think it was kind of aimed at her voters?
Of course it was.
I'll hang on.
All right, thanks, Julie. No, and we'll have to ramp the show up here. But no, of course it was. She was trying to tell those gun people, look at me. I made fun of those kids who got shot at. Ha, 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 ha. Aren't I cool? And all of a sudden, someone called her and said, what the hell are you doing? And all of a sudden, she's like, oh. I mean, the fact is, if it was a standard Republican problem, they would have never apologized. The fact that she actually did apologize is there. But this is what should bury her in her district. Are you for mocking and insulting kids that survived a gun slaughter? Well, if you are, then Mary Franson's your candidate. For God's sakes, people, just stop with attacking the kids. McAdee's up next. Till tomorrow. See ya.